Think we can make it?
Oh. I don't know.
Well,
what's with the coughing?
Let's fix things by going to the doctor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's just not do asbestos dust in your office.
No.
For a start.
Is this my beer? No, it's not a beer.
Stop putting sandpaper on the ceiling.
Welcome to the Raft Podcast, Let's Fix Things, where Chus and myself, Joe Fletcher, explore the world of connected experiences, spanning from connected services, platforms and devices, over industries such as transportation, smart home, logistics, healthcare, and media. Chus and I started this podcast to explore design and strategy topics in more depth coming from the projects we handle in our design consultancy. Now, on to the show. Chus, good evening.
Hey, man.
Oh, man, this is really weird, sitting in a open studio in an open space. So we are broadcasting somewhat live from ThingsCon Salon.
Yep.
I would say, is that the appropriate name?
Yeah, yes. I mean, to do like the full name, like ThingsCon Amsterdam Salon, because we're a branch from the global ThingsCon thing, which actually is kind of weird because we're by far the most active one, but yeah, it's Amsterdam. We're Amsterdam.
Yeah.
All right. So that new voice you're hearing is our guest for the week, which is Marcel, who works at The Incredible Machine. And I don't want to try to describe this because I usually do a poor job of describing guests' companies. So Marcel, can you tell us about The Incredible Machine and what you guys are doing?
Yeah. So we do strategy for companies on emerging technologies. So we see influences, opportunities in emerging technologies, and we kind of try to get a grip on those developments, figure out where the opportunities are, and validate them for these companies. And we do that for companies like Zodiac Aerospace, Lego, recently a lot for Festool, the German power tool manufacturer, but also like a lot of smaller companies who just want to get a little bit of an idea of where this world is heading and what their place is in that world.
Nice. And so you set this up tonight. So for those of you listening who aren't familiar with the term salon, so I learned this when I came over to Europe, it's basically a meetup with a series of talks that is both a come and have beers and a sort of networking event, as well as gain information from a few people who are talking. Would that be a correct? That's at least how I interpreted it as someone who did not know the word before I came here.
Absolutely.
So you set this up, and you've set a few of these up, and you also do ThingsCon, like the one that runs in Amsterdam. And so why did you set this one up? And then also, what's a little bit about ThingsCon itself?
This edition in particular, we wanted to do something about the narrative of building the future. It's something that a lot of makers, a lot of designers exercise. Like we talk about, it's in the nature of design to, you don't design necessarily for like today. It's always about tomorrow or what's expected, or at least you try to shape, you make the world a little bit better, means you contribute to some future. So this was definitely about embedding the, you know, creating some language or to have this discussion about the future. And a discourse for designers. And this was salon number 7. Before this edition, we did 6 more about a very broad selection of topics. We discussed ethics in IoT. We discussed speculative design. We did one about haptics. We did one at Southwest Southwest a couple of weeks ago. And now we just did our 3rd annual conference in Amsterdam. Last edition was in Fox Hotel, where we did 2 days full of like a lot of topics. It's not too centered around one topic, except for it's about the opportunities and implications of IoT for like especially creative industry or like the creating industry, so to say. And it involves especially a lot of workshops. We're big on workshops. For some reason, we love to do stuff like we did this afternoon with a bunch of people creating newspaper ads for speculative products. But yeah, so that's what we do. ThingsCon is about trying to nurture the development, support the development of responsible IoT, and that can have many different ways of doing.
Yeah, what I've seen at when I was at ThingsCon is like there's a nice mix of company people that come there that sponsor the event or that come there as groups from a company, but there's also very many makers and the the smaller ones under us that are actually making these futures happen.
Yeah, it's about half is small scale makers, designers, smaller companies, and about half is companies who sponsor the events and send over their people. A lot of education.
I think it's a great place where actually the conversations between these groups get started. What you see happening at bigger conferences is that this contact is less, and ThingsCon, I think, is a great place to get into contact with these companies as young entrepreneurs.
True. Yeah, we try to make everything very low-key, and just like the salon tonight, it's sure, it's about presentations, about workshops, but we also try to leave as much opportunity as possible for people to interact, because that's the key of a salon. If we want to build discourse, it's not us broadcasting to a community. It's like the community does it itself, and most of the people who contribute are from a community of makers. It's not that we are curating it necessarily. It just emerges, kind of.
Can you tell me, since in our past episodes we've talked a bit about ethics, mm-hmm. So the salon you did on ethics and IoT, what were some of the takeaways that you walked away from with that? I can't believe we missed this one.
Well, it was long ago, and it was not a very popular one for some reason.
Wait. You mean like people didn't give a good feedback?
No,
up?
Left. No, there was not a broad audience. There was not a big audience for ethics and IT.
That's really a shame.
That was for toys. Like toys was like five times as many people as for ethics.
This is so much of what bothers me about. I get just the design industry, right? It's like toys are fun. Yay, let's show up.
Yeah.
But the harder discussions are around situations like ethics, yeah. right? Privacy, yeah. security, and what's actually coming in and living yeah. in your house that is yeah. controlled by other companies.
Yeah.
And that's so much more yeah. of a difficult conversation. And I don't know why it's not being engaged in at a deeper level within the design community.
Right, that's yeah. where you start to look at the Barbie with the voice interface mm-hmm. that all of a sudden starts giving a certain vision of how kids need to live their life. They can ask it questions and then Barbie will answer them, but Barbie is a role model. So parents all of a sudden don't have control anymore on the narrative that kids have with their toys.
True. I think we definitely see a friction between what we perceive as ethical at the moment and what we see happening in the IoT world. Something that I'm concerned about is we see these products with like covert operations in your house. Like how I recently did a talk on this topic, and I said an Amazon Echo is nothing more than an empty shopping cart that needs
and
to be filled.
And it plays music. It plays "I Was Made for Loving You" by Kiss.
on demand when you want it. Sure. But you asked about what my main takeaway was from that meetup, and maybe the biggest takeaway was that ethics is not so much something that's fixed in time and space, and it evolves with new developments. I mean, it's maybe it doesn't evolve as fast as technology, but it's sure affected by so everything that happens in society makes us think about what we find desirable or not, and what we find right or wrong. Of course, there's some core ethics in our culture, but what I learned is also how fluid ethics can be. And to me, being a European, creative, fairly left-oriented person, I have a totally different ethical framework than some, you know, of my high school friends, for instance.
Yeah.
What I find important is that I have individual choice. I might, you know, I'm a Fairphone user. And that's a serious trade-off, maybe, to user experience in terms of, you know, maybe the I'm not in pace with the most recent developments in mobile technology, but this is something I find more important than maybe some a seamless user experience. And to me, that's an ethical dilemma. You say this is important, this is right, and maybe something else is less right, but to someone else it can mean something else. And we're developing these notions still. And I think that's why we need to have these conversations, because it is developing, it is changing. And if we don't discuss ethics in our profession, it might develop completely on its own.
I like how you're talking about the fluidity of ethics, and maybe even the locality or culture base of ethics. We had a guy speak today here at the salon as well, named Paul Skinner from TelArt, and he's involved in building a big museum of the future for Dubai. And this museum of the future shows off things that could happen in the future, and it's meant to inspire discussion amongst politicians and people who make decisions. And he was talking about how they made this exhibit about how a virtual reality AI could in the future take care of your baby. And he said that they came up with the idea, but they themselves felt kind of uncomfortable with it. But when they showed it off to people in Dubai, they actually all already had nannies. So it was just a tiny step to see that a normal person nanny could be replaced by an AI nanny. And maybe an AI nanny in their eyes was something that you could control more than an actual person, right? So that shows that these ethics that we're talking about are not set in stone. They have a certain cultural background that they live on. And yeah, it's not determined by a single person. It's determined by all of us.
So Marcel, let me challenge you with an interesting scenario. So obviously our listeners don't know, but on our side, myself and Lily, who's been on the podcast before, gave a talk tonight. And in the talk, we referenced to this idea that a lot of devices currently are being made for convenience and a lot of devices are being made for the individual. And we would like to see devices solving real problems around infrastructure, agriculture, these types of situations. And we would also like to see devices for the community, not just the individual. But when we were putting this together, one of the situations that came up was that if you start designing products for a community and you start almost making a homogenous community, how much do you, and this was Lily's question, I want to give credit to her, mm-hmm. how much do you lose identity if everybody starts having the same device? And literally one of the scenarios she was talking about is that everybody in the future, we have this great sharing economy. And so I live in a house that is supplied by my my work, by my profession. And I get up and the window is automatically open for me, cueing me to get up. And I walk outside and the automated driving bus all picks us up. And we have this great shared living lifestyle where we don't need to own anything and we can be quote unquote autonomous. But in a way, we're less autonomous than we ever were because now we subscribe to this community of technology that controls us. And I'm just curious because we challenge that, but at the same time, when you challenge that against the individual inconvenience, you still end up, this is my dystopian problem, you still end up in this dystopian future.
Yeah. I had a very interesting conversation recently with someone working on smart grid energy distribution, where they look at where when and where the demand is high, so they smartly distribute energy over that grid. And we said, so what does it mean for a grid to operate in the most optimal way? And he said, well, if you just stick to a predictable pattern, we can make it work in the most optimal way. So it kind of has to come from both sides. So you just behave as predictable as you can, and then you can have this seamless experience, because otherwise you would run into, you know, a cold house when you decide to go home early. Now, the thing is, throughout a project that we were working on this particular smart grid thing, there was this idea of, it was not an idea, I have to phrase this in the right way. So we had this discussion about if having access to personal data of people would allow you to more fine-grainedly predict what they would need when. So you would, I don't know, you'll have Kiss in the morning playing from your Amazon Echo, and maybe it has access to your calendar and it knows, like, tomorrow you have an early flight. You know, I'm not going to play Kiss at 8:30 because you're probably already on your way to Schiphol. Now, the thing was, what we said is, does an algorithm need to identify a need when I also, as an individual, can express a need? Why can I be the filter? Why can't I be the agent expressing needs, and we just connect better to those needs? And I think it's a very solution that's very apt for today. Let's say it's not really, I mean, there will be more anticipation of what we'll do, of course. I mean, you get your tax reports pre-filed, you get your tax reports, they're already filled in if you want to do taxes. So we're already kind of get accustomed that data is being provided for us, and now it's really about data, and cars will perform, for instance, they will defrost your windows because they know you'll get up at a certain time. That's already a feature that's being pushed in modern day cars. On the other hand, I think we are so messy as people, we are so unpredictable, that I don't think we'll ever get a product service system that can really accurately predict how we behave. So can we design for really basic, like base of the pyramid Maslow needs that are kind of generic, can be generalized among a community? Sure. If, you know, but I, you know, to me it would be a nightmare waking up with KISS every day at 7.
This is my dystopian versus your utopian.
Exactly.
I think what's interesting is that you said that the energy companies love people to act predictable, right? Mm-hmm. And you guys are advising these energy companies on how to work with data and how to sort of maybe use personal data to predict or at least react quickly to it. I'm wondering if the energy companies being the biggest player here versus the every person being an individual, are they looking into persuasive design? Because you have things like peak hours and valley hours where everything's cheaper, and they use that to steer you to hope that you do your laundry in the weekend.
Yeah. Well, I have to make a very clear statement here that this energy company that we're working with are actually, you know, as ethical as it gets. Mm-hmm. So they are kind of addressing this development that we, in the future, there might be other companies that will look into the data to use load balancing on the smart grid, and that they rather don't want to be a part of that, or there has to be very compelling reasons to do so. But I have to admit that the context of our engagement with this energy company is about ethics.
Okay.
So this is already a team that is very conscientious about what's happening and what the implications are of a data-driven world. And they try to make the right decisions, and we help them to kind of give that a manifestation. So do they see that this development is happening? Yes. And I love, they have a lovely analogy for this.
Okay.
They were saying, if you're at home and you you pull open your laptop and you have like super slow internet, a super slow connection, what can it be? It can be like, I don't know, there is some Bitcoin miner some worm Bitcoin miner on my computer that's hogging my CPU. It can be maybe I'm accidentally downloading some files in the background that I'm not aware of that's hogging my bandwidth. There might be a trillion computers on my network, or there might be, anyway, there can be millions of things that go wrong up until the point there's a brownout at your internet service provider. You just don't know. The only thing that you get is shitty internet speed.
Yeah.
And you have no way to assess where things go wrong, so you have nowhere to complain. So this energy company said to us, make this transparent. Just help us to just completely make it clear to the user what defines the energy they're getting at home, so they can decide for themselves. If it's transparent, they can decide for themselves what they find is ethical or what's not ethical. I think that's a very nice, a very deliberate place to position themselves in this debate.
Yeah.
So they're not saying, and that's what you were just addressing in your discussion with your colleague, can you decide for a whole community what's the best solution? They say, well, if we make a decision as an energy company, that would affect everybody in the Netherlands. If we make a certain decision, if we say people are at home at 6, and that will affect the energy you're getting at home, that's a decision they make for everyone. And there's generalization to make for everyone. So they say we have to find a position in this and not do the persuasive. I like the angle that you're poking at with the persuasive design, but that was just not discussed, and I should be careful, because that's not well on the table. So I'm not aware of any of those ideas that
I'm,
they are.
I'm just happy
with
to hear that the ethical angle actually did not per se come from the designer side, but was the request for the project to begin with. That to me is a good trend that I want to hear more often.
Cool. So we're winding down here. I see we're closing out the joint. So Marcelo, if there's a few things that you think people should know, maybe from the futurism point of view or anything else on connected devices, on IoT, What are some of the top of mind aspects? And that can be anything. I'm purely curious because I love talking to you. So I'm purely curious what you would come up with.
Given that you probably have a very broad audience, I would like at least to address the notion that technology is not objective. Technology always embeds certain values or a certain belief set without us knowing. There might be cultural connotations. We might build self-learning systems that adopt to bias. There's a very interesting little book out by Ruben de Pater. It's called The Politics of Design. It's about how in graphic design we embed cultural values even without us knowing. We refer to things. We exclude certain demographics. We might generalize things about a society that aren't necessarily true. So let's all create an awareness that these things are happening in technology, and technology is not this white, flush, frictionless, polished surface, but it's actually interacting with people and not with everyone in the same way. So that's something that I want to address as a topic for the coming period to think about for people in the projects they commission, in the projects they work on, in the conversations they're having with their colleagues and with people in their industry.
Cool. Well, Marcel, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm sorry I don't meet you more, but we'll need to fix that.
We'll need to fix that.
And Guus, a pleasure as always. Do you guys, we don't have Dutch people on the air very often. Would you guys like to sign off in Dutch?
Yeah. Now, Marcel, dank je wel.
Nou, Guus, yeah. Het was heel erg gezellig om hier te zijn. Als u mij zoekt op internet, kunt u mij vinden onder de naam Marcel Schouwenaar uit Rotterdam.
Ah, perfect. Nou mag ik ook even Brabants praten.
Oké,
dat was het.
Cool. Thank you guys. And talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.